Welcome to ABA Happy Hour. All right, so we're really excited to have this guest with us. I'm particularly, words are hard already, really excited to have this guest in particular because we're going to kind of talk about some OBM type of things. You guys know me, you know how much I love that. So I'm going to let our guest introduce herself and just kind of tell us a little bit about herself just to start with.
Hi, guys. I am Kelly Siphon, and I'm super excited to be here. I'm really excited to talk with everybody today and to see the comments that y'all leave on this podcast. My name is Kelly Siphon. I am the owner of Applied Behavioral Happiness in Wake Forest, North Carolina. I am a behavior analyst, and I really love agriculture and farms. That's my little extra quip about me. Is there anything else in particular y'all want me to touch on in an intro? Because I think that pretty much sums me up.
So super strange, Lenine. I think you're talking, but I don't hear you.
Same. I could see your mouth moving, but I couldn't hear your question.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Okay, sorry. I was just asking if you could kind of tell us a little bit about the population that you work with.
Absolutely. So I spent about 7 years working in classic autism care in Colorado and then here in North Carolina. And now I'm working with all kiddos regardless of diagnosis. So I've got kids that are like right on the edge of that autism diagnosis, but not quite there. So it's that really interesting line between you have no services and you have all the services, mm-hmm. is that diagnostic line. So we get a lot of kids that are sitting right there. We work with a lot of kiddos that are ADHD. I see a lot of really interesting, and not interesting in like a positively connotated way, but some really interesting self-injurious behaviors, things that I didn't see before. We work with a lot of kids that have gravitational disorders or oppositional defiant disorder. We've got a lot of different things going on, but we don't require any diagnoses. If a family's having some struggles with challenging behavior, we're ready to help.
I love that. Yeah, I have been following y'all's Instagram for a while, and I love like everything y'all are doing. You talk about like different, like from a therapist perspective. You talk about from, you know, the parent, from the. I love it. Like all of it is fantastic. So I love that.
It's been a fun Instagram and Facebook to curate for sure. It's really cool the diversity of people that we have involved on the page, because we have people that are like, yeah, ABA, and people are like, what in the world is this? And then I've got a number of people that are like, boo, ABA is the worst, but I'm willing to listen a little, and I'm like, great, let's talk.
I love that diversity. That's what it's about.
yes, and their opinions, their insight is so helpful to our practice. So being able to get that diversity of thought and being able to use social media as a tool in order to access that diversity of thought has been phenomenal.
Yeah. That's a big thing of like why Jesse and I even started this podcast, was to kind of demystify ABA and kind of reach some of those people that, you know, aren't our biggest fans, if you will. Because, you know, I mean, their feedback is really important to kind of help our field grow and help us be better behavior analysts. So we're here for it.
Absolutely. And I love that y'all have some cool conversations, and I'm really excited you invited me to be a part of one.
Yay. Yes. Okay. Cool. So since this is happy hour, one thing that we always ask our guest is, what are you drinking?
That's a good question. So normally it would be like a sparkly water. I do live on a farm. I got a little dehydrated, so I've got just a plain water today. We only cook with alcohol in our house, just a choice of what we've done. I think that it's it's really cool to see how everybody works out, you know, like what they do in their homes and what we do in others. So I'm super excited to hear what y'all have going. And I hope it's more exciting than plain water in a green plastic cup. What y'all got?
Lenina, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I'm actually drinking wine again today. So I have a white Zinfandel. It's kind of sweet, sparkly, you know, kind of light, almost like a rosé. It's pretty good. I'm enjoying it. Feeling fancy. Delightful. Yeah, yeah. Feeling fancy today. So, you know. What about you, Jesse?
Yeah, super fantastic. I'm currently drinking water because earlier I was drinking Hefeweizen. So that's where I'm at right now, but I'm on a water level right now. Yeah. So
there you go. So we're all good and relaxed. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're all on the same page. So
gotta rehydrate after all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, water's important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag self-care, y'all. We're rocking it.
That's right. Hashtag.
Yeah, I'll make sure that's part of it. Yeah. Any
absolutely. I love that.
Absolutely. Well, so now that we've talked about what we're drinking and, you know, Kelly, you've introduced yourself. We know a little bit more about you, what's going on. We talked about how I'm like low key stalking your Instagram.
We're huge fans. Huge fans. Yeah.
Y'all, I have the best staff ever. Did you see the picture recently of one of my staff that got decorated by one of our kiddos? Oh, you should go back and find it. Decorated head to toe with toys. It's like Christmas. It's wonderful.
I love it.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna have to see that. Because that's obviously important. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I love that. It sounds like you guys have so much fun. So it's ABA happiness, right? Like
Applied behavioral happiness. That's the one.
I love it. I love it. Just bringing that in. I love it. So today we like wanted to talk a little bit about creativity, right? And like how that kind of fits in with everything that you're doing. Like you guys do so much, right? So like there's definitely a lot of creative space there. So being behavior analytic, right? Like we have to have definitions. Like how do you define creativity for y'all?
So that's a really good question because the field of creativity studies and the field of ABA within creativity studies, no one agrees. It's kind of like trying to define tantrum, where the operational definition is so different depending on who you are, your perspective, your past experiences and all those different things. So for our company, we say that we work in deliberately creative ABA, and we pull deliberately creative from the Creative Problem Solving Institute, which I've spent a lot of time working with. I'm super excited to present again this year in June on some different types of ABA techniques that can be used to increase creativity. And so kind of melding those two. But when we come to defining it, our big thing is, how do we find more ideas more efficiently? And whether those are like big C ideas, like, oh my gosh, we changed the world, or they're little creativity, little C ideas, like, oh, we made something a little bit cooler. Man, we did something super fun with this child, is fine by us as long as we're doing it efficiently. Because a lot of what we do is like, man, I've got a little friend here, and the kids that I work with, I call my friends. So I've got a little friend here that's having a lot of feelings. Seems to be sort of an access attention combination sort of function. Okay, well, does it matter what kind of attention? Then I could take my creative side and go, 12 different kinds of attention, go, you know, and start thinking of those, and we can get more deliberate with our assessment there. Or I can go, okay, if it's in this combination, do I need to do a component analysis, or is it simple synthesis plenty to be able to make sure that I'm meeting the need of this child in the best way possible? Because if I'm teaching them I'm a functional communication, then I better darn well know what they're trying to communicate, you know? So even if it's just little bits of creativity that don't change the world, it completely changes how our kiddos see us as somebody who understands them, And that's huge.
Awesome. Sorry, Jesse, you look like you have a question.
No, y'all mind me. I'll talk your ear off. So I'll try to like pause.
Yeah, no, no, you're great. Good. That was just so big, right? Like creativity is kind of like the way you just described it, right? Like that somebody recognizes that you understand them based on like your kind of creativity level, right? Like I think that was huge. That was so huge. So as a behavior or as a science of behavior, right, which is what we are as behavior, you know, analysts and in training, or as we are, right? Like how does creativity play into that, right? Like why is it important, I guess, might be a better question.
That's a beautiful question. And I think it's something that's been really cool to watch the field kind of get back into. So there's a fairly good bit of research in ABA on creativity when radical behaviorism was vogue. So at the beginning of Skinner's work, he's, you know, super radical in many ways. But as we start to see the funding for behavior analysis turn into a very narrow path, so as we see, and this is me observing, not being like, oh yeah, I really know about this. No, this is just my observations. I observed that the tone and the direction of the research seemed to kind of follow that same vein, which makes sense. We needed to make sure that these protocols that we were using were genuinely helping people. And if that's where the funding's at, of course, that's where the research is going to be at. So we see a huge dip in creativity research. And then as fourth wave started coming through and more radical behaviorism became a little bit more vogue, we start seeing mindfulness, we start seeing Hayes come up, we start seeing Hanley really start to pop out. We're starting to see more research on the creativity side. And I think it was, I want to say it was 2019, ABAI had a whole panel for creativity. So we're starting to see in the field, like this is pretty cool. One of the things that we can look at when we're going, wow, is this important for us? Is first of all, I've got so much here for why it's important. So the first thing I'm going to mention is that when we're thinking about working with neurodiverse people, what a beautiful thing to be coming from a perspective of, if we can think differently, that's better for everyone. And when we go from a deliberately creative perspective, we're going, man, you think differently than me, and that's the best. We're going to make so much cool stuff happen. Like, you and I together, we're going to do so much. And you're doing stuff that I could never do. And that's amazing. Bless you.
Sorry.
Oh, heavens, how dare you sneeze. No, you're good.
Don't do that ever again. Yeah.
Yeah. We're BCBAs now. Biology is not allowed. I'm sorry. No, sneezing. We self-care. Again, sneezing's totally fine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when we're looking at it from that perspective, you're good. From like, how do we honor the people that we are working so hard to be the best for, to come from that position of, oh my goodness, you think different. And that's the best. Like, yes. How do I honor that in you? And instead of trying to change you or make you more like me, how do I honor that best in you and develop your skills so that you are the best you? And I think that is a reckoning across the field that creativity will pull really well in. I think that as a second point, when I'm talking with staff and I'm starting to see a lot of burnout, one of the big things that I see is like, man, I can't think of another thing to do with this child. Like, they've got four or five interests. They've kicked me out of all of them. They're saying, you know, see you later, please go home. And honestly, in our clinic, if a kid is like, leave me alone, I want to go home, we're like, okay, we'll call mom. No problem. Like, we're not going to force you to stay here. We're in a cool situation. Not every group can do that. But right. If I've got a staff that's going, I can't think of another thing to do with this friend. All they care about is this string. And I'm like, well, let's think of 50 things that we can do with string and see if we can be invited back into this child's world. And I say child again, because I work with kiddos. And so we go, okay, we can stretch the string. We can get long string. We can get short string. We can use really skinny string. We can sew with the string. We can take the string and put it in our hair. We can take the string and tie it around our foot. We can take the string and get different lights. Then we'll do blue lights and then red lights. Can the lights flash? Is that safe for this friend? Okay, let's try that. And we can start having a beautiful, like, let me join you in your play pairing session, where it's like, you've got this thing that you love. Can I be an enhancement to that? And creativity is such a great way to do that. And to be able to do that means that you don't run out of ideas during session and you're continually going like, I still got a chance. I still got this. Everything's good. Instead of being like, I've got 2 more hours. I don't know what to do. Like, I really want to be able to help this friend, but I can't, they won't let me reach them. Okay. Well, great. Creativity. It'll save the world. Yeah. I've got more if you want more, but those are two huge ones.
I already have like 52 thoughts of where I want to go.
Let's hear one at a time.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to try to keep it together. Okay. I'm so excited. I can't even put it into words. Okay. So I want to talk about the first point that you made. First of all, I love it because I think that that's really important. Our guys, you know, as far as like autism goes, it's a learning disability. So these guys have to learn in a different way. So I think by necessity, we as their staff and their service providers have to approach it differently as well. So I think creativity is huge there because, you know, we have to kind of think outside the box just to make sure that we're serving them better. So I love that. I'm all over that. And then for me recently, I've kind of shifted at work into more of a, you know, management type of role. And I have to kind of refocus because now the direct staff is like my customer, if you will, right? So they're the clientele that I'm serving. So I have to kind of be creative in how I approach things with them too. And I think that's kind of what, like your last point about, you know, with staff and them being stuck and having to kind of try to think of some different things. I feel that way in my role and in my perspective too. So, you know, when you are stuck, how do you encourage them to kind of, you know, think outside the box? You mentioned like the string, that's the only thing that, you know, your client wants. So how do you encourage in your staff for them to think of some different things to do instead of just being stuck on the fact that, you know, either like sometimes we get stuck on, I'm just not sure like which way to go, or this seems to be the only thing, but I really need them to do this, you know? So how do you kind of guide that thought process for them?
I actually have a class on this, an online course. Applied Behavioral Happiness, one of our online courses, is in creativity in your work. So specifically on this, but let's throw out a couple of the different things. Because my favorite thing when I'm working with people is, because I'm a behavior analyst, I treat it as a behavior analyst. I go, okay, let's take baseline data. If I say the child is into, I'm looking at right now, some little puffballs, like that's all they want to do today. Rock on, kiddo. I'm not going to judge your play. That sounds great. Let's play with puffballs. And they're like, no, you don't do it right. Okay, cool. Well, now I got to think of it. So I'd go to a staff and say, okay, given this puffball, tell me as many things as you can, like as many ways to play. And I'm going to be taking data on two things. I'm going to be taking one on how many ideas they come up with, and the second one on how many non-ideas they come up with. I'm not good at this. I can't think of anything else. I don't know. Those sorts of, if we're going from like an ACT perspective or an RFT perspective, those sorts of, or even just from an operational definition, that's the opposite of thinking of an idea is telling yourself that you're terrible at thinking of ideas. You know, that's our anti-definition there. So I want to keep track of those because if I'm seeing a whole bunch of those, what I'm seeing is that we have a block between I can think of things and I can judge those ideas as good or bad. And I want to really break those two things apart. So once I have that baseline data, what I want to do is encourage that staff to work on just thinking of things. Like say every, I don't care if it's the stupidest idea in the world, just say it, just get it out. And sometimes it's easier for them to write because then they're not being judged by you listening during that moment. Mm. You can try that. But just practicing and gaining fluency in that and having them track in themselves. Again, I'm a very radical behaviorist, so I see those thoughts of like, this sucks, I can't do this, this is really hard. I see those as things they can track on the side as well and be like, okay, what can I replace that with? Whether it's a deep breath or what have you, whatever works best for that staff. But if you're stuck in the moment, the like, oh my gosh, this kiddo's into puffballs, I literally can't think of anything else. What I suggest is to combine and piggyback. So I'm seeing for my desk right now, a pink poof ball and a blanket, okay? They're way into the pink poof ball. How do I make the blanket a part of it? Well, if I flap the blanket and the poof ball now rolls across the floor. Is that cool? Or like if I put the blanket down and then put the poof balls on it, is that cool? Or if we line them up on the lines of the blanket, is that cool? So by bringing in another item, I can, and combining that in, I can have more ideas pop up. And the other thing again is piggybacking, where it's like, okay, they're really into the green poof ball. How about the pink one? Can we do the orange one? What if it's a big one? Like that's a ball. Could I try a different ball? And just sort of making small changes off that, almost like you're shaping in your own mind. Mm-hmm. To bring you to new ideas. Those would be the two things. Like if you are stuck in the moment, I try those first.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Mm. Yeah. It's really fun to watch staff be like, oh, I have an idea. Yeah, you get it. And it's even better when then the kids are like, oh, that's a cool idea. Really?
Yeah.
Really? For once I'm not late.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, by almost having a strategy of how to be creative seems mm-hmm. to kind of make it easier. So I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm writing it down. Don't judge.
And if y'all want to talk about we didn't talk about this before, but I just thought of it. I can do a coupon code for that class too, for your listeners. If you think that would be a good.
Yes. For no one else other than me. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. Oh, you're so cool. Okay.
I'm so glad you're here. You're so kind. I'm excited.
I love creativity.
Let's be friends.
Yeah, like from an ABA perspective, like creativity, like operationally defining it, right? And then like exploring it, like it's just so interesting. I love that that's just something that you do and incorporate and, you know, put into practice, right? I think that's fantastic. And so, of course, like being a radical behaviorist, as you kind of mentioned, right? So Skinner, right, our dear friend, right? So he has this quote from one of his writings for the reflection, the shame of American education, right? Which I'm sure could be interpreted a lot of different ways. But this particular quote, right, he talks about, it's said that students should do more than what they've been taught to do, right? And that they should be creative. But does it help to say that they must acquire creativity? Right? So I'm kind of curious, like what you're, as we're talking about creativity and defining it and looking at it, and like how that looks in practice, right? Like what are some of your thoughts on that quote and that perspective?
Certainly. So from a very applied classic ABA therapy sort of setting, my first thought would be generalization and programming for generalization from the beginning. Because it's one thing, you know, if I teach you 2 + 2, but if that's all you learned, then I've taught you nothing. Like we need some pivotal responses in here. We need to make sure that you're able to take this and make it a skill set and not just a memorization task. And I think that's something that's really interesting about looking how behavior analysis is changing too. It's less like, let's get down the thing and then we'll get it down and then we'll have the next thing. And it's turning into more like, let's generalize from the beginning. Let's program for generalization really early. My interpretation of that quote is much into that, like foreseeing that if we take this science of behavior and we try to make it too rigid for humans, we're going to lose a lot of the beauty. We're going to lose a lot of the kindness, and we're going to have effective, but not natural, learning. Whereas if we go from the beginning, go, okay, I know this science is effective and I know I can apply it in a really kind way. And I'm going to make sure that we have generalization from the beginning. And I'm going to make sure that whenever possible, I'm trying it a little different, and I'm switching it around a little here just to make sure that we're not stuck in a rigid place where all you learned is what I told you. And going into the research too, like looking at relational frame theory and looking at all of the different oh goodness, there it goes out of my brain. My terminology has gotten weak, y'all. So I've got A to B, B to C, therefore C to A. I'm talking about derived relations. Whew, thank you there for your patience. Mm-hmm. into those the more cutting edge research, I think that Skinner had a beautiful thought forward into that. Like, I can teach you A to B and I can teach you B to C. Let's make sure that you have the skill of learning beyond what I taught you, which is C back to A.
Right. Oh, that's awesome.
We're getting deep today.
Yes.
This is it.
Yeah. But I think that that's important. I think that, like you said, like generalization from the very beginning is really important, because what we, I think, especially when it comes to working with individuals with autism, one of the biggest critiques that we get is the rote responding, you know, that they are quote unquote robots and that kind of thing. So generalization and programming from that up front, and ensuring that we're not just teaching them the one response, but, you know, how to respond to the, you know, different stimuli, kind of avoids that pitfall of just that rote responding and, you know, them becoming quote unquote robots. So, yeah, I think generalization is really important.
Good stuff. Yeah. It's interesting watching the effects of very effective, very efficient application of behavior analysis. And then now going like, okay, we have people telling us now, like, yeah, it's effective, it's efficient, but it was hurtful to me. We go, okay. Well, we know this, again, the science is good, the science is neutral. Now, how do we take that and make our application, that first A, the applied part of behavior analysis, into something that is both effective and efficient and even better than it's ever been? And how do we make sure that we're even better than we've ever been? And what a cool place to be at as a field to go, I'm pointing at everybody here, get to be a part of that really neat change. And I'm super excited for all the people that we will be able to help in the future.
Yeah, I love that. So how did you come up with the idea to put ABA and creativity kind of together?
So I started in the world of creativity. For my bachelor's, I had a kind of a mishmash degree in leadership, agricultural leadership development. And then I had minors in business administration and creativity studies. And I thought creativity studies was the jam. It was the best. I was looking at master's programs. And then the way things worked out, I ended up moving to the family ranch to help care for my grandparents. And while I was there, there was a local master's for education. I was like, oh, maybe teaching. I like kids. That sounds cool. Like, I love ranching, but, you know, I could use a little bit more income than just helping out on the side on the ranch and doing these things. So tried that. Nope. Mm-mm. Love the kids. Could not be a teacher. Y'all, teachers, every teacher listening, you're amazing.
Yes.
Good on you. Like, that is a skill set. Yes. Claps. Yes. But I do not have. And I applaud you and everything that you do. The system within you work is such an interesting and intricate bureaucracy that I was not able to successfully navigate while maintaining my mental health. It was like, this ain't gonna work. So from there, I slowly made my way into behavior analysis after a couple more ranching jobs. I sold car parts for a while. Like, I was all over the place trying to find myself, and I fell into ABA. And after a couple of years, what I started hearing from folks is like, how did you think of that? Like, how did you, like, you were interacting with that child. We weren't able to, you know, figure out what in the world they wanted. And it was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just playing, no big deal. And then I realized, no, I had hours and hours and years of training in this that most people don't have. And so I had to have a moment of humility, which at that point I wasn't very strong. And I was like, I'm the greatest. This is amazing. It's like, oh no, I just had the training. Like, get off your high horse and just help people get the training. And so that's when it really started to click that, like, oh my gosh, these are really cool together. And like, we can do some really neat stuff. And that's where I started doing some basic applied research to see if we could really get strong in it.
I love that. I also love people's like story of how they found ABA too. So
yeah, mine is quite wobbly.
Here's all this other stuff. And then here's ABA, right? It just like happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I, long story short. I literally sat in a front office and was like, I will be interviewed now. I know you didn't call me for 3 weeks or return my calls, but I would like an interview. And they're like, no, please leave. I understand. I will leave if you need me to, but I know the owner's back there. So can you just make sure that I need to leave? And she's like, I like your moxie. Come in for an interview. And that's how I got into ABA. I got home. I was like, what is ABA. And there you go. Sometimes when you need a job, man, the world just works out in a strange way.
I love it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that. I hear that. And so like, 100%. So kind of bringing it back though, a little bit too, right? So, I was at a recent conference, right. And it was awesome. And they like included, a diversity piece, right. An inclusion with in the conference. Right. And so they were talking about like how diversity and creativity kind of like can collaborate, right? Yeah. So how would you say like behaviorally or otherwise, right? Like however, to define that, right? Like how do diversity and creativity kind of like fit together?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. So like we talked about earlier when we were looking at neurodiversity, like, okay, this is a new and different perspective. Thus having this person be the best version of themselves is the most awesome thing we can have. Well, it's the same with any other perspective. So if we've got a whole bunch, and the classic example is old white men in a room, mm-hmm. we're going to have a certain set of perspectives. We're going to come up with a certain fairly predictable set of ideas.
Yeah.
But when we bring in more stimuli, when we bring in more people, when we bring in more perspectives, just like with the puffball and when I added the blanket, it suddenly got better. Bringing in more diverse perspectives brings in so much more richness in that creativity. And it's the basis when we come to group work of actually having anything new happen. Because if we keep thinking the way we've kept thinking, we're going to keep getting the same thing we always got.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is what I've heard is the definition of insanity, right?
Yes. That was my play on insanity. Very good.
but you brought up perspective taking, which I think is a really big piece of that, right? So like how do perspective taking and creativity like fit together, not fit together, work together, not work together? Like what does that look like?
Absolutely. So I can send you all a link to this as well. De Bono is one of my favorite researchers in creativity. He did some really neat stuff in lateral thinking. He was the one that spearheaded a lot of the six hats, although there's some controversy as to who actually started that particular set of research and whether that was fully him or whether it was mildly plagiarized. So I won't get deep into that. But he has one video where he has many videos, but one in particular where he is lecturing and talking about airplanes and was looking at, well, what are our assumptions about airplanes? And, you know, we assume that the best place to be if you're the pilot is up front and on top. Well, let's change that perspective. Let's change that assumption. And if I tell you the best place for that pilot to be is at the back, at the bottom of the plane, you tell me why. And by forcing that change in perspective, in his case, he often calls it Poe. It's the addition of something new that you have to jump off of. Mm. By forcing that perspective change, we can now find new ideas. And we may realize that, you know, if it's a warplane, we need somebody in the back on the bottom to be able to be the gunner. And we can go, oh, when I change my perspective, when I force that change of perspective, I will find new answers. It's almost like forcing diversity within yourself.
I like that. Yeah. It's like that skill of perspective taking really like kind of creates creativity in a
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. It creates the agitation of your assumptions.
Mm.
And once your assumptions are agitated, like, oh, this is how you're supposed to play. Well, this friend plays differently. Okay, my assumption has been agitated. Well, now I need to get creative. It's a force into, like, it's the SD for let's start thinking. Because if everything was the same, again, I'd just come up with the same answers, the same ideas. Because it worked before, it worked now, the SD hasn't changed. You know, reinforcement has been in place for this behavior. Why would the behavior change? Why would there be any creativity until sometimes you have that forced change of perspective?
I think that that's one of my favorite things about working like where I'm at now and just, you know, my experience in working with individuals with autism. Like, you know, I've worked with all ages, all support levels, like, you know, just kind of run the gambit with that. And to me, it's pretty cool because like you're saying, like, you know, different perspective, like we may see the same behaviors, but they're different with each individual. And so you still can't quite do the same thing that you've done before. You know, you will have to tweak your approach in at least one way. I mean, and that's, you know, best case scenario. Typically you have to just start all over, you know? So like you're kind of forced to be creative in that. So that's one of the things that I've loved about this is because it's really hard to get bored.
Yeah, definitely. The creativity on the programming side, I don't think can be under, like we can't yell to the top of enough mountains to be like, hey, we need to develop creativity in our analysts because programming is hard. Mm-hmm. And making sure it's the right program for this particular friend is harder. So let's make sure that we've got the skills. So we're not like, I don't know what in the world to do. Like I'm literally hitting my head trying to figure out how to help this friend because I can't think of anything else. It's that same burnout as we see in our direct line staff.
Yeah. So, and that brings me to kind of my next question as well is what are some common or kind of frequent ways that you use creativity, like in your management style to kind of avoid that burnout in staff?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I did early on is I decided, okay, what are my assumptions about management? And that came a lot from what have I seen done right and done wrong? Because I've been at, let's see, 1, 2, 3. This is my fourth behavior analysis company. So I've been at a ton of companies, but they've been in very, very different situations. In Colorado, I was mainly working TRICARE and I was on different bases. Yeah. In my first place here in North Carolina, I was working a lot of private insurance. So I was spending a lot of time in really beautiful places with very nice houses and, you know, fancy, fancy. I'd go in and be like, I don't want to touch anything. I literally live on a farm. I need to remember to bring extra shoes because like, I don't like, I'm not sure if I'm comfortable. This is so well kept, which is, you know, my own assumptions and issues for sure. And then my next facility that I worked at was all, it was a nonprofit, pretty much all Medicare, Medicaid. So we were working with friends that were having a really hard time remaining above the poverty line, which is another big shift. And then now I'm working with a totally different population. So looking at that, I had a lot of different, and I'd been in the administrative positions at each one of these in scheduling, intake, in billing. I'd done a little bit of everything. And I'm like, okay, well, what if I take the assumption that there's all these positions and I'm going into this alone and I'm bringing stuff in with me? What if everybody has every position? What does that look like? And so that means that when my staff have an idea, I say, okay, who wants to run the COGS? COGS is cost of goods sold. And I taught them how, after some training from a wonderful financial advisor, I was like, okay, here's the spreadsheet. It's got the formulas already in it. Go ahead, work out the numbers. If you can make the numbers work, good to go. And that has been a beautiful and empowering thing for me to do, because when I come back and I'm like, it needs to cost this much, and one of my staff is like, man, I'm thinking as a single parent, no, like you can't do that. I'm like, well, show me the COGS. You know, run through the numbers. Sounds great. And they are empowered to come up with programs to get the financial backing behind it, to get those, check all those numbers and be like, okay, here's my data. Here's what's up. And again, by taking the assumption of, you know, I'm the CEO of this tiny company, and going, no, everybody can be a part of these big things and it's okay to have these conversations. That little change in perspective completely empowered the team. And I'm telling you, I am around the most amazing people. They work hard. They're dedicated to the kids that we serve. We're a new company. We've got growing pains. We've got all these different things. And the ideas they come up with, because they know that their ideas will be well received, doesn't mean that they're all going to go through, but they'll be well received. Man, it's amazing what not putting a behavior on extinction will do. It's flourishing. So it's been really neat working through on that.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds like kind of just like creating that space where, like you said, not putting it on extinction, right? Yeah, that just like blew my mind for a minute as far as like other behaviors, right? And like what that can lead to and what it cannot lead to, right?
Absolutely.
Man, I think that's such a big deal. And so like kind of piggybacking off of that, right? So like kind of going back to some of the perspective taking, but then also like just kind of integrating these different things and not putting something on extinction, right? Like as behavior analysts, like we have to collaborate with other fields, right? We have to collaborate with some of these just people who are outside of the behavior analysis field, and there's just so much, right? Like what are some examples of times that maybe you've had to collaborate with someone else that has led to a little bit of creativity either on your part or someone else's part, or you know, and obviously like HIPAA compliant, right? But like what would that look like?
Of course. So I have collaborated with teachers, OTs, PTs, HIPAA therapists, so equine assisted therapy. Music therapy. Oh, SLPs. I love SLPs. Such good work.
Yes, absolutely.
Linguistics professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, group home staff. Like, man, not nearly everybody. And I'm so excited for the next group of people that I get to say, like, yeah, add them to the list. But one of the things that I think about a lot was a client of someone else's that I was called in for consult at an equine therapy facility, where it was someone who had suffered a fairly severe traumatic brain injury. And we were trying to make sure that when we gave instructions that they were clean, clear, and concise, and that they were understood from there. And they were still having some trouble. So coming in and watching the staff work, it's like, oh, one person's clean, clear, and concise, and the next person is clean, clear, and concise. And we're like, hold the reins, hold the reins, hold the reins, hold the reins. Well, everybody only said it once, but that's four times. And, you know, that's a lot of input, especially for someone who's healing from something. So we had to do a little bit of like, okay, how do we know who's going to be speaking? How do we know how long we're going to wait? We're on top of a horse, which they may decide they don't feel like waiting anymore, you know? So how do we make sure we've got the right horse that's going to be able to be like, oh, we stopped? Great. I'll wait too. Sounds perfect. You know, if somebody's a little bit wiggly, that's not going to be a good one. And then for staff, like, hey, what are you going to do if you hear it and you want to repeat it? Because naturally you want to be helpful and you want to repeat it. And that could mean, you know, it's different for everybody. I'm not going to say, okay, every single staff, what you need to do is hold the bubble, you know, like preschoolers. Right. For me, it's hold a bubble. Like if I hear myself start to go like, oh, I'm about to say something. If I have that big breath in, the best thing for me to do is like bubble my cheeks and let it out and be like, all those words into my cheeks and out silently. But working with the different staff and be like, hey, when the instructor, because it's usually an instructor and then two sidewalkers, so people walking on the side of the horse to make sure that the person riding remains safe. Like sidewalkers, when you hear that instruction, you got 10 seconds of anything but say something. Let's talk about what those behaviors are going to be for you, you know, and wording it differently, because I'm not going to be like, hi, let's think of how to differentially reinforce our own behavior so that you can decrease the instances of repeating SDs. Yeah, that's great, crazy lady lingo. Like we heard about ABA, you make robots, get out of here. You know, you gotta come in and be like, hey, you know, let's have a moment of thinking together. You are the solution. Let's find it. Because, you know, that they are the solution. I need to fade out. I need to work myself out of a job. So that I think would be one of those times where it's like, okay, we're working together. We all see the challenge. I think, you know, using my behavior analysis mind and skills, I can go, okay, this is probably a good solution as far as an outcome goes, like only one SD, let's cut it. Now y'all need to help me in the middle, because every person is going to be different and might need a slightly different intervention.
I love that.
You leave with that. I feel like we've got some mind blowing. I'm
honored.
For sure. It's all right here. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm already like processing, like, oh, on Monday I'm going to do all of these things. So I want to, first, I love that you said that you're trying to work yourself out of a job, because that is literally something that my boss tells me all the time, because I very hands-on. I like, you know, kind of being the person that like digs around in the dirt, right? But as I have, you know, been promoted, like you have to take a step back from that. And I struggle with that so fiercely. So work, you know, being able to work yourself out of a job is sometimes a lot harder than, at least for me, it's a lot harder than it sounds. But I loved your staff is the solution, because they are. And I think sometimes even telling them that and, you know, empowering them enough to feel like they're the solution can have, you know, such a huge, you know, allow for such a huge progression in just their own behaviors.
Absolutely.
I'm excited
and
to try
it. You have a lot of pairing. Yeah. If you have a lot of pairing with a kid, and we had this recently where I'd been working with a kid for months and it was time for me to transition off and let a staff come on. And the kid was like, no, I've been hanging out with this chick for months. I'd like to stick with her, and loved hanging out with my other staff, but was one of those, like, I need to back up because I'm not creating pairing here. I'm creating a excuse not to pair, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was the fact that they weren't bonding quickly was tearing down my staff, who's awesome. And this kid clearly enjoyed. And the fact that I had to step back and be like, I'm just going to watch you through the window. Like, I'm not available, even though you're calling my name right now. I'm so sorry. And not like in a mean way, I'm ignoring you, but in like a, hey, you know, I'm here if you need me, but you don't need me, bud. You're good. Yeah, that's hard. That's hard. It feels, one of the things that I had a boss tell me a while back was, you're not the mama. And that, you know, it was, yeah, I know. It was like, well, of course I'm not. Oh God. Because you take in these things when I stopped working direct with kids. And when I started working with kids with more developed verbal skills more often as we moved into applied behavioral happiness, I recognized like, oh, I've got a parent in the room with me all the time. Just about, because that's the way that we do services, is parents join almost every session. I'm no longer the person who gets to be the first person who hears this child talk. Because I had several instances where I was the first person who got to hear the first word. And that felt so good. And then I realized, in realizing that I was missing that, I was like, oh, I stole that from a mom. I stole that from a dad. I had a moment that maybe I didn't deserve, you know? And it's a weird thing to go through, to be like, oh, like, that's really interesting. And how do I within myself decide, you know, to come to terms with that and go, you know, it doesn't mean I was doing a good thing or a bad thing, but to realize in myself, to take that ACT perspective of like, okay, let's observe this moment. That being able to let go and going, someone else needs this moment, especially when you love these kids so much, is so hard. Do y'all feel that?
Yes.
On the ACT perspective, I'm like, oh my God, that was beautiful. And then on the other perspective, I'm like, yes. Because I've had parents tell me, like, you know, oh, like, this kid, like, did an Easter egg hunt for their first time, right? Like, you know, these things like that, like, kind of what you're describing, right? These different experiences, and you're like, oh, like, am I robbing like this parent of that, right? And so you were kind of talking about, you know, applied behavioral happiness and like how that got up. So, like, tell us a little bit about that, like, because I feel like that kind of correlates with what we're talking about a little bit. So,
like, how the business got started?
Yeah, like the name and kind of where it comes from, and just kind of like your perspective on it, because it sounds like that fits with this conversation too. So
yeah, so it was as bumpy as getting into the field itself. So I was working with some amazing people at a really cool facility, and I was recognizing that the friends that I was serving had a lot more needs than what I could provide them. Mm-hmm. Again, I was working with a lot of families that were struggling right on the poverty line, and I wanted to give them so much, and I wanted them to be able to have so much, and I wanted to be able to be so much for them. Mm-hmm. And then in the next second, recognizing like, you're not, you know, and just to be perfectly honest, you're not the white savior. You can't come in like acting like you know everything. I can't come in and I can't fix everything. I don't know everything. These parents will know this child better than I ever will. You know, there was a lot of like in the South, we call it a come to Jesus. Like, hey, you know, like, stuff's happening. And I recognize like, oh, I'm not good enough for these families right now. Like where I'm at in my life and where I'm at in working on my own stuff and trying to figure out myself as a practitioner and trying to figure out how to balance all the different needs of these families. And I went, man, I'm not good enough and I'm burning out. And it got to a point where I was like, I'm not good enough. I'm burning out. And now it's an ethical concern where I need to take a step back from the field. And man, oh, that broke my heart. It broke my heart because this is the science I love. And I've had the pleasure of doing so many cool things and working with so many amazing families and seeing so many amazing changes happen. And then to go, and in this moment, I can't do that. I need to step back. So that's what I did. I took a step back and I was working on the farm and a couple different farms around. And I was like, man, there's got to be other people burn out like this, like good people for this field that do good things that, you know, hit a rock or didn't have what they needed in that moment or were working with a population that they weren't trained well enough to work with. Like, man, working with people who are struggling with more than just a child who has autism, with so much more in ways that I can't imagine, like that, to not have the training and to go in there and to think that I was, you know, like, yeah, I'll be fine. No, I was not serving them well enough, period. I was not good enough for them. I was not trained well enough for them to make sure that they got what they deserved. And again, that hurt to figure out. But in taking a step back and realizing other people must be going through this too, I was like, oh, I'll do company based on burnout. Yeah, that'll be good. It ends up people that are burning out were like me. They were like low on funds and couldn't put any more effort in and just like needed a break. So it wasn't a good business plan. It would be great for like a nonprofit, not a good business plan. But I'd already come up with the name and I'd already started this thing. And then I was doing these occupational burnout seminars and sessions. And this was pre-COVID, barely pre-COVID. It was November 2019. Great time to really get deep into a business. If y'all can go back, like that is the time to start a business. Perfect. What in the world did I do? So I do these big group presentations and people would be like, that's nice. Parental burnout. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care about this occupational burnout. Parental burnout. That's what I'm here for. Like, I know you said it was occupational. Yeah, yeah. No, we need to get on subject. And it was consistent over and over. And I was like, okay, what can I do to take the skills that I've developed and make sure that these families that could never be served before have these services available? Because I had worked in intake and scheduling. So I'd gotten plenty of calls where I was like, yeah, can you give me, you know, your paperwork that shows you have an F-84 diagnosis, the autism diagnosis from the DSM-5, because that makes you eligible for insurance and for these services. And yeah, we don't have that, but we need so much help. My child's doing this, my child's doing that. And I'd have to say, I'm so sorry, our company's not set up to take your case, or you'll have to go on a wait list because you don't have this kind of funding. I'm like, okay, let's see if we can fill this niche and let's see if we can do it a little differently, a little deliberately creative, so that we make sure that we have the training in the backing we need, that we make sure that when we've run into an issue with competency, we're bringing other people in, and then we make sure that we are genuinely working to be the best that we can be every step of the way. And man, we keep trying. We'll continue to be better. And the stuff we've done so far has been awesome.
I'm like, as a parent, as some, like, I can hear all of that.
Yeah.
I will raise my hand and say, yes, please. Yeah. Right? So I'm so glad that we like found out, like, obviously from this perspective, but also just knowing like how much you guys are pouring into like these other areas, right, that are a little less touched, right, and what those look like, and these different online courses that you provide, like, man, invaluable, right, to like these parents who are like, well, they want something, right, and so you have been able to provide them with something, and like as a parent, I'm like, oh, thank God, right? Like there's something out there for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody needs a diagnosis. We run everything based on milestones versus time. So your budget doesn't say how long your child needs, because we recognized really early, like if a child needs more time, that shouldn't cost a parent more. We just need to make sure that we're pricing our things to make sense, because if you don't know how much it's going to cost to reach a certain goal, like how could you budget for that?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of little things we're trying and tinkering with.
I definitely, we're going to have to find a time. I need like some, because that is something I have always kind of wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have to find time to talk about that more, because
you got my information.
Yeah.
Call me up.
You know how to find you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm fun to talk to you anytime.
I love that, because I've had so many ethical questions about that. So if anyone listened to our last podcast about the Enneagram, you know that solid number one, I'm super concerned about ethical concerns. But
the Enneagram is cool. That's some neat stuff. I love that we're seeing more assessments in ABA too, like looking at love languages and Enneagram and different things to be able to find reinforcement and like, oh no, yeah, like ethics is reinforcing to you.
Extremely. I just want to do the right thing. That's all I want out of life. So, that's always a question that I've had as far as like the budget and the pricing of like, you know, we are here, you know, this field is almost public service, you know, like, so it's really hard when it just kind of comes down to the bottom line. Like that always kind of hurts me a little bit, you know? So
that's something as a business owner, I've had to go, okay, none of my staff ever send anything about money. It's only me, because it's so icky and it sucks. Mm-hmm. And I've had to just have repeated exposure and habituation to, we're talking about money. And as the owner, that's my job.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting one. It's hard.
It is.
You just want to help all the little babies.
All of them. Every single one.
Yeah. What helps though with what we do is we have some, like I have a program that's $25 a month.
Ooh.
Like having those options, and I have free stuff going, like the Instagram, we've got a free mailing list where people send us like, hey, I'd really like to see a blog on this. Or can you spend a month talking about that? No problem. You'll get a once a week message where we're just throwing out as much free stuff as we can, because your budget shouldn't say whether or not you get services. Now, I can't give you, you know, everything for free, but I'll give as much as I can, you know? And if we can start with that, then that makes I have something expensive way easier for me, because I know that, hey, if that doesn't work for you, I got these 12 other things that are either free or super low cost. Totally understand.
Right.
Let's go.
I love that. I really do. Because that's just near and dear to my heart personally, because I feel like ABA is right there with just basic education that like literally everyone needs it in one respect or another. So
we behave.
exactly. So yeah, I'm going to find a time, because I have so many thoughts and questions about that, but yeah.
For sure. And I think one of the things that makes that argument really, really salient is when we can give like, this is when I used ABA on myself. So I was doing a lot of feeding programs and I was like, man, am I just being a dick to kids and making them eat things that they don't want? Like, I really got to feel this out. And so I went, okay, I literally, like if you give me a piece of raw tomato, we'll like gag and throw up.
Yes.
That's an aversion. Okay. Can I use the same program on myself? And like, is it okay? Or does it suck? And I'm looking at the data from different kids and going like, okay, this is about the speed. Here's about, you know, the different targets along the way and the end goal. And it changed my way of doing feeding programs a good bit. And at the same time, I was like, validated in that I love tomatoes now. And I was like, well, shit, I also hate, if y'all need to cut cursing, let me know.
No, you're good. You're good.
I also, when there's no kids around, thank you for allowing.
All good. Thank you for asking.
I also hated bananas. And I was like, can I do this with bananas now? And I crave bananas now. And so it's like, okay, this is cool. Like, all right, you know, if I'm able to do these programs on myself,
right,
you know, then all right, we've not only got a good science, but I'm willing to take this application and apply it to myself. Now, the third thing to think about in the next reckoning that I'm going through is, I know I fully consented to that feeding program because I did it to myself. Mm. How do I make sure that the children that I'm working with are fully consenting to the same program? Ooh. And that's where my mind starts to get blown, and we start thinking about like, again, we've got effective, efficient, but how do we make sure we've got kind in there? And I'm really excited to see how we develop more and more ways to to assess consent and make sure that the people we're serving are being served. And I'm excited for every step in that direction.
Yeah, I love that. What is your current, like what that looks like right now with clients?
So I did a really neat project, and I've talked about this in a couple podcasts with Dr. Kunavatana, who did the original research and was at another facility that I worked at. And the original research she had done with a couple of adult males who had no communication method. And she went, okay, she and her colleagues went, okay, well, we could say, hello, person, you talk this way now. Okay, we could do that. But what if we didn't have to do that? What if we could say, hey, person, how would you like to communicate? Because you have every right to tell us. And can we figure out a way to do that? Well, most people would think, you know, you need to completely teach somebody how to communicate in this way, and then completely teach them in that way, and then figure out maybe, you know, do they preference. Want one or the other?
Yeah.
And her protocol showed a way where you could partially teach the beginning of a couple different types of responses and then assess which one was highest preferred. So we replicated it with a young child who didn't yet have a communication method beyond, you know, pointing and taking you places. So we had the basis of communication. We had the basis of, I would like that thing, please. But we didn't have a clear, like a picture exchange or a voice output device or a sign or a vocal verbal communication. And we took those same protocols. And again, I can link you to this article if you want to include it in your notes.
Totally.
We took those same protocols and we applied them with, I believe it was a sign, a picture exchange, and there might have been an ACC. I can't remember in this moment. I do apologize for that. But we had the same results where this child was able to very quickly be like, no, picture exchange. Like even if no matter what she did, it was reinforced, whichever response she chose. It'd be reinforced. She always gravitated back to the picture exchange. We're like, okay, you have told us that that's how you'd like to communicate. And does that mean that, you know, in the long run, if it's more advantageous for a bigger reason to be using an ACC device or what have you, and we might, you know, encourage that change later or prompt that later? Sure. But why not start where somebody would like, you know, they have every right to say it. And then, as I said, in our clinic space, if a child says, you know, go away, we step back. We'll say, like, if I need to be in your space, I know you don't want me in your space right now. I completely understand. I do need to stay by the door, but, you know, I'll look away. I'll do whatever I can. Or if they say, I want to go home, great, let's get you home. No problem. So following a lot of Hanley's work to make sure that, like, kids are enthusiastically choosing to work with us. One of the really interesting things that we have is we have a goodbye sticker, which is just a thank you for working with me today sticker. And kids will self, I'm going to use punish, not in an ABA way, but in a non-colloquial way, mm-hmm. in the greater use of the word. They will self-punish if they felt like they didn't have a good day and say that they don't deserve a sticker. Oh. And it's really interesting to see that when we're going, you know, hey, no matter if it was like, whoa, that was a day. like, hey, are you ready for your sticker? Sometimes they'll be like, no, I didn't earn it today. Mm. And we never put that contingency in place. So it's interesting to see how the greater contingencies of the world, you know, of what's going on in their short lives still apply within our setting, even when they've never been directly applied. And so we look at like, okay, if that's still going, then how can I make sure that they're consenting and not appeasing? Or, you know, there's all right. these different things. And I'm not perfect at it. The best I have is I want to make sure that kids are comfortable being here, that they'd like to come in, that they talk about staff and they're excited to see them, that they are willing to talk about what's been going on, and they're opening up and we're seeing progress. And that if they say they don't want to be here, they can leave, you know? Just having that ability to escape is the basis of stopping a lot of trauma in the world. Because the basis of some of the worst trauma when it comes to leading to like PTSD is inability to escape or inability to act in a moment in order to save yourself. So if a kid's like, oh, I want to get out of here, it's like, great. We can do that. I got to keep you safe. You know, I can't have you running in the street. Mm-hmm. You know, they may be, I can't let you, you know, run out of this room, but, you know, I'm going to work with you best I can to make sure that I give you as much of the escape you're asking for as possible, because that is going to allow us to make sure you're consenting this in the long run.
Yeah. For some reason, like a flag went up in my head about like learned helplessness, right?
Absolutely.
And like how that might correlate, right? Or not, right? And how like you're kind of setting up this aspect of not creating a learned helplessness, you know, behavior pattern, right?
Got to be careful not to put it on extinction. You do, you're going to get that learned helplessness.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's so I work with adults, and I feel like that's something that I kind of deal with, is like the aftermath of that, if you will, of like so many forced choices to when they get with me. Now it's like, well, I have to push them to advocate for themselves or to like just tell me what it is that they want. And it's the hardest part of my job. And like sometimes it's what leaves me going home like with like my heart just feeling like really heavy and broken, because there are times where I get the impression that they're not even sure what they want, and that they have to look towards external sources to figure out what it is that they want, which, you know, I understand, like, parents obviously want the best for their kid, and I completely understand that. But like being able to make your own choice is so pivotal and such a huge, I didn't think it was a skill until I started working with this population, but it is a skill that's really important to just open so many other doors for them. So, you know, we would call that a pivotal behavior. So that's a huge thing for me, is like getting my students to advocate and getting them to tell me what they want their services to look like and getting that assent. Absolutely. You know, because some of my guys can't fully consent because like their parents are technically still their legal guardian, that kind of thing. But definitely, like assent is still huge. And getting that, because if I don't have their buy-in, they're going to do everything they can to avoid doing, you know, whatever it is. No matter what I set up the reinforcement contingencies to look like, if I don't have their full buy-in and participation, it's not going to work.
Since I work with super verbal friends now, we're able to, after any big incident, again, we usually have mom or dad or both present, or other caretakers. And we'll, when everything's kind of cooled down, we'll look at the caretakers and be like, hey, were you comfortable with everything I did?
Mm.
And then we also later talk with the kiddos and in less direct terms, ask the same thing. And if they're like, we had a friend that was like, no, I don't like when you follow me. Like, okay, let's talk about when I have to follow you and when I can back up and how I can make sure that I'm not following you in those other times. And having those conversations, it's a privilege of sharing that level of verbal behavior for sure. And when we have friends that don't have the same level of verbal behavior or have a level that we're not able to interpret or fully understand, we get into some really interesting stuff, and I'm hopeful that we can have more and more research on making sure that we are hitting that. Another thing that flew up in my head was the first time I heard the term over ABA'd, and it broke my heart because it was another BCBA, and they're like, yeah, I'm working with this kid that got over ABA'd, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Like, well, they've always had an SD behavior consequence. So they're just looking for the next SD in everything in their life. And they couldn't make a choice. They didn't have an opinion. They just wanted to find the next SD to lead to the next correct choice in behavior, to lead to the next reinforcer. And it was so interesting. Again, we talked about earlier, like the starting with generalization and the getting that flexibility early on and watching this, I believe that child was a teen at the time, just have such a hard time self-advocating, just having such a hard time knowing within themselves what they actually wanted. It was like, man, we didn't do something right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a friend that I've seen for the first time, is brand new in my company, but as a field in this moment, we didn't do something right here. And how do we make sure that our friends are, exactly as you said, able to self-advocate and able to make choice? And man, it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And like that, for me, that kind of brings it back to, you know, earlier you were talking about Sorry, my cat is like in my face right now.
No sorries for cats. I love animals.
Right there. Like Rupert is right here. Sorry. So that distracted me. But basically you were kind of talking about like essentially like what a derived relation was, right? So like mm-hmm. the contingency between the sticker, right, and self-management and self-report, as you know, to a degree, right? And so that I think is a very interesting you know, piece too, right? So like a derived relation, while there might be some that we're hoping, right, from A to C, like translate, right, that we're like, as we're teaching, and we're like, okay, we hope that this is what's connecting, but then we realize that it's not, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how, and this is, sorry, this is like an off script question, but like, you know, how has that related to you? Like how have you seen that, and kind of how have you, as you've seen that, like how do you approach that, like as you encounter that?
So I think the way that I conceptualize it is like a derived relation I didn't expect. Like I didn't realize there was a B and a C, you know, right. Like, oh my gosh, it's all webbed back in a really interesting way. And in those moments, I choose to accept that the child has made a choice and just acknowledge, like, just so you know, it's available. And I appreciate that you spent time with me today. Well, I don't deserve one today. I hear what you're saying. When you're ready to say goodbye, know that it's going to be waiting for you. I'll have your two favorite sticker packs there. It's 100% your choice. You don't have to take one, but it's yours if you want it. Mm-hmm. And just sort of, instead of trying to be like, no, you deserve it. You deserve it. Kind of sit in that moment and be like, I'm going to validate the fact that you feel you don't. And then from there, I'm going to make sure that you know that it is available. So kind of two SDs there. The first being, I'm trying to present an SD for your expression of feelings will be acknowledged and respected, which is a huge thing we do here. Like, if you just tell me you're feeling mad, great. Like, you're not punching me. Perfect. Like, what you my friend? Yeah. And then the second being like, hey, you know, this is not an S delta. Your behavior is not an S delta to a goodbye sticker. I want to make sure that you know it's available. And if you choose not to, you know, no matter what that reason is for your choice, that's your choice. You know, I'm not going to try to force it on you. As long as you know it's available, and as long as you know that your ability to choose is here, and your ability to say that you feel you don't deserve it is here. We can talk about that in another time when you're not in this moment, you know, when again, talking back to sort of ACT, where it's like, we've got our feelings right here, right now, where we're not going to be able to sit back and look at it from afar. We can talk about these situations once we can get some perspective. But in this moment, you know, I respect that you're making that choice. Just know that, you know, I still have this available for you. And it will even like, we've got a little ledge. We'll make sure the stickers are there. And we'll be like, you know, here's the three ones. Choose any one you want. Step back, give some space. And sometimes kids are just like, I don't deserve it. And I'll walk out sad. And I'm like, oh man, breaks my heart. But you know, it's kind of a part of life for me as the adult not to be like, no, I'm going to save you. Have a happy moment, you know, to be like, no, they're choosing, and not choosing in like a, man, you're choosing to be sad, quit being pathetic, but in a, they're choosing to have an emotion and to feel it fully. Right. And that needs honored as much as a happy emotion would be, you know, mm-hmm. And yes. That's heartbreaking. Like, it's really hard to be like, you're feeling sad and I need to not fix it.
Yeah. I also think that like with that specific example that it's really, really cool that they've created their own rule for that, you know, and that they've set their own kind of standard in that I need to be here the whole time, or, you know, I'm not sure what it is exactly, but like, I didn't stay the whole time, or maybe they had a behavior, you know, that lasted too long or whatever, but they're following that rule and kind of holding themselves accountable, if you will, which I can tell you as an adult is really difficult. So good for them.
Yeah.
Because I would have taken the stickers. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I always took it from the negative side of like, they're creating this rule for themselves to kind of tear themselves down. But you're right. That is a skill to be able to go like, hey, I'm holding myself accountable. I like that you brought that up. That's an interesting other perspective that I hadn't taken on that.
Thank you.
Boom. Perspectives.
guys, I'm here all day. Like,
yeah. This is why you host the podcast, because y'all know.
There you go. There you y'all go. Know. We'll say that. We'll say that. Okay. Sorry, Jesse. I have no idea where I could keep going, but I'm gonna refer to you.
No, I appreciate how fluid this is. It's just fun being able to talk behavior analysis and have these deep, important, and difficult conversations with people, you know?
That's one of our favorite compliments. So thank you, really and truly.
Yes. And
you're very, very welcome.
Uncomfortable, right? Like, we don't get comfortable with being uncomfortable unless we habituate to it, right?
Yes.
And so 100%, right? Like, that's a program within itself, right? Like, right?
Yeah.
Look at us. Here we are. That's a program of our program, I guess. Oh my goodness. Okay. But yes, absolutely, absolutely. And so I know that we have some fun resources afterward that we will discuss. But I think that we have some fun random questions for you that were, we talked about some unscripted ones. These are definitely unscripted, but they're only for you. And they
lay them on me. Yes. Is it a speed round? Because I love that.
And so very exciting, very exciting. So this is called our last call portion.
Okay. So, first question, this is an easy one. Well, at least I hope so. What is your favorite part of the work that you do?
Oh, my favorite part of the work that I do is that first time that I see a parent crying out of happiness instead of out of despair. Because I get a lot of parents where, like, within the first call, they're like, hi, I'm a total failure and I'm the worst parent ever because I'm calling you. And I'm like, oh man, if this wasn't what I heard from every parent that called, I'd be really worried about you. But now I'm just worried about everybody. And we have a lot of tears because the reason they're calling me quite often is because we've got some really intense, challenging behavior. And whether that means that it's got a long duration or it's a really, really intense, like dangerous thing that's going on, you know, there's probably going to be tears at some point. And that first time where we see that breakthrough and it's like, oh my God, like I'm so touched by what my child has learned and what they're doing. And they're showing all these really neat skills. It's like, yes, that's a form of happiness that you can't replicate. Like that is a really deep contentment of like, I can believe in myself. I have pride in myself. I have pride in my child. I can see what's going on. I put hard work in. Like there's so many different big, beautiful feelings in that, good, bad, and otherwise, that make for such a strong reaction. It's like, and it always makes me cry too. We're like, stop it. Now I'm crying. I'm not crying. You're crying. We're all crying.
Yeah.
It's those moments are just so beautiful. And sometimes the kiddos will have them too, where they realize they hit a skill and they have that like epiphany look on their face. And it's like, yes, this is what we're here for.
Yeah.
So that is my favorite.
That's a good one.
You had your own. Yeah.
I do much party arms. We're about to put out some fun videos of me celebrating with a kid. Y'all will have a good laugh.
I love that. I love it. Yeah, that's always a great moment though, because it's that light at the end of the tunnel. Like, you know, there's hope. Oh my gosh. You know, I didn't even think that this was possible. We can totally do this. You know, I love that. That's a great, great moment. And it's even funner when we can share it with parents, like you were saying earlier, like not stealing those moments, but like when we can share it with them, that's even better.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. There was like an Easter egg hunt that I had like a similar situation with, and the parent was like, so stoked, like, and it's like, so you're like, oh man, like I take this for granted. Like, as a parent, right? Mm-hmm. Like I took that for granted. And then I heard that and I was like, oh, like you're right. Like, oh man, it's so big. It's so big.
Yeah.
So the next one, what is the most unique thing that you have taken data on?
So much. So because I live on a farm, I take constant data on animals and different things going on. So I've taken data on gestation periods, on different rates of giving B12 shots to anemia results and a FEMATRA score for checking the islet of a goat. Yes. I have taken data on myself for everything you can think of. I have at least 3 programs right now with data going on. Like,
I love me data. It makes me feel better. Data is kind of my security blanket. It helps me make sense of the world and even those things that are really hard.
So like, man, if I'm working through something that's like, this is bringing me down, I'll take data on it. And that kind of helps me as an analyst, because that part of my mind is well developed and that skill is very well developed. It helps me work through where it's like, okay, now I can deal with this emotionally because I was able to get through my little logic bit. So yeah, I'd say probably the farm related data. There's so much, like hoof growth, like waves and teeth, because horses, the way they wear their teeth, they'll get waves through them. So when you go in and float them, which is help them grind down so they don't get sharp points.
Oh, wow.
Taking data on how much the different waves are there. Like, yeah, some crazy stuff.
Okay. All right.
Because love of data.
That's not what I was expecting, but I really and truly love that.
I love it.
Yeah. So yeah, I hope y'all weren't expecting something normal, because you came to the wrong place.
That's perfect.
I do not sound normal here.
I love it. Oh yeah, that was better than I could have hoped for, honestly. Yeah. Okay. And then if you could interview anyone, who would it be and then why?
Oh Lord.
Technically 2 questions.
Yeah, that's such a hard, like, you know, if you can meet somebody from the past, that's such a hard one, because first of all, the expectation is the world peace answer. Like, I have that moment in myself, that verbal behavior of like, give the answer that's like world peace, like say somebody who's famous and has a lot of like cloud around them so everyone thinks you're cool, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh. That's a really hard one for me. Cause again, I'm having a hard time working through that verbal behavior of, you know, say somebody important. I think that I would interview. Y'all are going to have to give me a minute. Shoot.
Yeah. Take your time. Take your time. We're good. Yeah.
I think I might interview. I would interview my sister when we were much younger, from the perspective of now adult me, having us both lived through and become adults, and talking to her then and seeing kind of like what her perspective on the world is. And I think the reason that kind of interview is important is because as we grow, we lose the perspective of what we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what the world was, because a memory is not something to be pulled up in a perfect Rolodex. A memory is something that is shaped and viewed through the current relational frame of our current mind and where we're at in that moment. Like if I'm hungry, I'm going to think about that time I ate a burger, you know, when I was 14, and it's going to have a way different feeling than if I just ate a whole, you know, turkey dinner, what have you. Right. So yeah, I think that would be really interesting to get her perspective on, you know, our lives from then with my perspective of from now.
That's, I love that.
Like, yeah.
14 different levels.
Oh, yes. Like, string answers only. Check.
Yeah, love that it. Was fantastic. And then mm-hmm. like also full circle, like talking about perspective taking, like you just brought that back in. Like
snaps all like, around.
Absolutely.
You're the best. So much reinforcement.
You need reinforcement. We are here for you.
Yes. Ultimate fangirls right here.
Yes. Love it.
Like y'all the best. That, I low-key stalk the ABA happiness social media. Like I know I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Applied behavioral happiness. I low-key.
Oh, you're just fine. I pulled ABA out of it because I was getting a lot of like, I Googled ABA and I don't know about that. I was like, okay, so for now,
yeah,
I need to have ABA out of my title because there's a lot of other things going on with that. And let's see if we can bring in from a different perspective, people into the ABA world.
I love it.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And so to just transition, right? Like, so where all can we find you, right? Like you have different courses available. I know that we have a very special creativity exercise that we will be posting as well. So thank you very much. But yeah, where do we find you? Where do we find all these things? What does that look like?
So you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Applied Behavioral Happiness. We're also on LinkedIn, not super active there. If it's business to business, you can find us on Alignable. Trying to think where else. We're trying to get out. Oh, and we're going to be launching a YouTube channel, hopefully late March, early April, which will have a lot of like what we do and some more tips and tricks, more free stuff available so that, again, I don't know the science. I just try to get it to people. So try to get more of that. Hey, if your budget's an issue, here's the free stuff. You're going to have a link that will lead to a free gift for your listeners only. Yep. So then just go in, you'll put in your name and your email. It'll be emailed right to you. You'll also get a weekly tips and tricks email from that. So we're not looking to spam you. We just want to make sure that you have the resources you need. The bottom of any of those, you can unsubscribe. So if you just want to get the gift and unsubscribe, cool. Just wait for the first email and click unsubscribe at the bottom and you're set. Totally understand. Because it's a sweet gift, let's be honest.
It is.
And then our website is appliedbehavioralhappiness.com. You can head on there. You'll see in our programs, our online courses, you'll see we've got a blog there, some more free resources on our blog. You can get a free consultation. If you would like to get a free consultation, we can do that. And if you ever have any questions or anything, there's our contact information is on there. So you can email Kelly, K-E-L-L-I-E at appliedbehavioralhappiness.com. And I'm pulling up my card because we got now an office number. If you ever want to call the office, 984-235-1058. We've got awesome staff here. If we don't pick up, leave a message. We will get back to you.
Fantastic. Yeah.
For that class, if you want 15% off, listening to this podcast here, use ABA Happy Hour. And the first 15 people who do that, that's going to be unlimited time. So it won't run out of time. But after 15 are gone, it is gone. You'll be back to full price. But that is a thank you for y'all for having me here and for everybody who's using this time to continue their education and collaborate together.
Yeah, I love it.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Wonderful gift.
Yeah, the more we can get these things out, I think the cooler we're going to have when it comes to conversations about creativity and really diverse thought.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously this doesn't have to be just for, you know, our field. This could be for anyone, I think, in no matter what area that you work in.
Absolutely.
You know, it helps to kind of think outside the box and try different things. I think that continues growth. So
you bet. And the course itself is aimed at educators of all sorts, whether it's in ABA therapy or teaching or what have you, and parents. So it can be used for both.
Okay.
It's got a bunch of different techniques in it too. So it's a pretty fun one. It's fairly simple, but it's a fun one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Y'all look exhausted. Was it too
long? I think my mind has just been blown so many times. Like,
No, y'all have a great safe space again for having these conversations. So I applaud you for being like, yeah, let's do this. Let's get deep today.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, thank you.
Here we are.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us and coming on and just being a part of what we're trying to do here. I think honestly, this, you know, was a great representation of just what Jesse and I are trying to do. So thank you again.
Of course. Thank you for having me. If you ever want to schedule again, I'd be happy to come on again.
Yeah, and like maybe it won't take us three times next time.
Yeah. Because now that we've got time changes now, we got our antecedent intervention in place. Yeah, we've got the snow put away. We can do this.
Yeah, so I'm so sorry for any part we played in that as well. But no, I think like honestly, like some of this conversation, like going forward, like I think that would be super cool. So I'm glad that you're open to kind of like a part two. Should we do that? Because I think that, like, I think obviously we talked about a lot. So I think we could definitely kind of recover some of this too. So that would be so awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Of course. Fantastic. Of course. Thank you again for having me. This has been a blast. To more amazing conversations, even if they're uncomfortable.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Cheers,
y'all.
Cheers.
I don't have a drink right by me, but okay. Yes. Okay. Done. Done.
If you guys are supporters and really like what you heard in this episode or previous episodes, please make sure that you like and follow us at ABA Happy Hour Podcast on both Facebook and Instagram. You can find us on both of those. And of course, always follow us on whatever podcast platform that you listen to. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and lots of other podcasting platforms. So just make sure you support us on whatever platform it is that you prefer to use.
Indeed, indeed. You're also welcome to email us at ABA Happy Hour Podcast. No, wait. ABA Happy Hour. Sorry, y'all. We're recording this after a couple. ABA Happy Hour at gmail.com. There it is. There it is. There it is. So you can email us there with any of your questions if you like. And then also what you can do, Lenine was mentioning all those lovely places that you can find our podcast. If you follow the link on there, if you really like what you heard, we are accepting donations of any form, really. Reinforcement is a big part of our podcast, of course. And so if you feel generous to donate and you have the means, we would love a little support to keep us going so we can expand a little bit too. We have some great ideas and we'd love to keep providing great education and laughs for you all.
Absolutely. So guys, just make sure you support us in whatever way fits you best. And we look forward to hearing from you.